the Book of Liberty. Quote, "The human race is in the best condition when it has the greatest degree of liberty." Quote by Dante Alighieri. Here's the summary. Liberty is the ultimate goal of mankind. The formula for achieving liberty has been given over and over again throughout recorded history. In the Bible, for instance, it appears as the four horsemen of the apocalypse, the four beasts of Revelation, and the four Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Yet few have heard the message. Listen deeply as it is said one more time. If you were granted one wish, and only one, what would it be? Of all things, wealth, power, wisdom, love, liberty, what would you choose? This may seem fanciful. Not so. It is reality. What you choose to think about, to concentrate on, with all of your mental power, will indeed become a reality. So choose carefully. There is no doubt in my mind as to my choice. There is only one thing I truly want above all others, and that is liberty. Liberty is the power to do what you want to do when you want to do it, to have what you want to have when you want to have it, and to be what you want to be when you want to be it. Liberty is the power to be the conscious architect of your environment, your experiences, and yourself. You and you alone are in control, and you know it. This is what I desire most. This is my first and foremost goal. It is, I believe, the ultimate goal of mankind. The achievement of total liberty for all mankind is the goal of this earth experience. Given enough time, it will be achieved. I want to see it achieved in my lifetime. I don't yet have total liberty. However, I do have a lot more liberty than most people. Through creating wealth, I have gained the power to have most of the material things I want. Condominiums and resort cities, airplanes to fly to and from work, luxurious cars for my use, expensive jewelry, clothes in the latest style. Notice I did not say that I owned all of these things. Rather, I have them. I have the right to use them. Some of the things I mentioned I do own, and others I do not. If I own a yacht but do not have use of it, what value is it to me? If I have use of my yacht any time I wish, what does it matter if I own it? Liberty does not depend on material wealth. Rather, it is the power to have what you want to have when you want to have it. Ownership of the things you want is immaterial. Through rendering service to others, I've gained the opportunity to experience many things, to travel to various parts of the world, to meet fascinating people, to be a part of and experience change in our time, to have loyal friends in every major city in this country. This is not the result of political power, but instead the result of personal power, the power to do what you want to do when you want to do it. Many people confuse freedom and liberty. Freedom is the right to choose among alternatives. In reality, everyone has freedom, the right to choose. For some people, however, the consequences for certain choices are out of proportion. If by choosing not to work you forfeit your life, then although you have freedom, which is choice, it is rather limited. On the other hand, if by choosing not to work you simply do not get paid, then your freedom, which is choice, is not unduly restricted. We generally use the word freedom to mean the right to choose when the consequences for choosing are proportionate to the choice. Thus, we speak of some countries as being free and others not. In this sense, you can grant a person freedom by making the consequences proportionate to the choice. Liberty, on the other hand, is the power to do and be as you please. Whereas everybody has freedom, the right to choose, few people have liberty, the power to do and be as they please. Why is that? Because liberty is always self-earned. It is the result of the choices you make. No one can give you liberty. You must create it yourself. The path to liberty is through an understanding of the nature of man. This understanding has been available to man since recorded time in a variety of symbolic forms. Why symbols, you ask? Why not just say it? There are two reasons for picturesque symbols. First, it is the way the mind works. We think in pictures, in images. Thus, a symbol has greater and deeper meaning than mere words. A symbol makes it easy to recall the totality of the concept. Secondly, a symbol is not dependent on language nor the degree of awareness. Thus, the same symbol can have meaning to people who speak different languages and to those who are at vastly different levels of spiritual development. The really important knowledge has always been conveyed through symbols. The nature of man, the path to total liberty, is conveyed through the symbols of the zodiac, the symbolism of the Egyptian Sphinx, the story of Daniel in the Old Testament, the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John in the New Testament, and the vision of the four horsemen of the Apocalypse and Revelations. Of the above-mentioned symbols, the four horsemen of the Apocalypse is particularly clear and relevant to our modern-day world. I'll use this symbol as a means to understand how to achieve liberty. The others, though mentioned briefly, will be left mainly for you to explore on your own. As you gain understanding of these symbols, you will recognize the same message given through all times, cultures, and religions. The four horsemen of the Apocalypse, Revelation 6, stand for the four natures of man, the physical body, the emotional body, the intellectual body, and the spiritual body. This is our makeup as we currently experience life. There will come a time when the first three, the physical, emotional, and intellectual, will be transmuted into the spiritual. Then we will know, not just believe, that the spiritual is all, and the only reality is the universal power, the I Am, God. Until that time, we must deal with the four natures which the Bible calls the four horses. The four horses are called the pale horse, the red horse, the black horse, and the white horse. Now, the pale horse represents the physical nature of man. Pale is the color without description, a grayish, ashen color. It is the word we use to describe a person who is ill or fear-struck. It is the color of terror and of death. A quote, "And I looked, and behold a pale horse, and his name that sat on him was Death, and hell followed with him. And power was given unto them over the fourth part of the earth to kill with sword and with hunger and with death and with the beasts of the earth." Revelation 6:8. The rider of the pale horse lives in the physical realm, subject to disease, death, war, famine, and the circumstances of the physical world. Knowing only the physical, which must with time perish, his lot is a living death and a hell on earth. Unpleasant as it may seem, a large number of people ride the pale horse. How do you know if you ride the pale horse? People who ride the pale horse live for physical sensations: eating, drinking, drugs, and sensuality. Drug addicts, alcoholics, and the obese, sexual perverts, and chain smokers all ride the pale horse. The pleasures of the body control their decisions. They fear old age, for to them it represents decrepitude, pain, emptiness, and decay. However, the pale horse does not refer just to the physical body. It refers to all physical and worldly things. Thus, those who seek above all else money, position, power for its own sake, and material honors also ride the pale horse. The workaholic, the power-hungry, and the sensationalist all sit on the pale horse, and also those who strive for riches, recognition, and influential friends. A person who seeks office in order to serve others is not on the pale horse. A person who has unlimited wealth and uses it wisely for the benefit of others is not on the pale horse. A person who is ill or handicapped and does not dwell on this handicap is not on a pale horse. It is not the circumstance, but rather the mental attitude which determines the pale horse rider. The pale horse rider lives and thinks in the physical realm. Now, the red horse represents the emotional nature, the feeling nature of man. The color red elicits emotion. It's the color of fire, heat, and passion. And this is the nature of the red horse rider. Here's a quote. "And there went out another horse that was red, and power was given to him that sat thereon to take peace from the earth, and that they should kill one another. And there was given unto him a great sword." Revelation 6:4. The rider of the red horse is the person who lets his emotions control him. This is the person who gets angry over trivial things, who reacts to newspapers and television. A red horse rider will have strong feelings about politics, religious doctrines, and social mores, and yet have little knowledge of these things. Temper tantrums, prejudices, childish behavior, and running other people's lives are indications of a person on the red horse. Strong emotions alone do not necessarily indicate a red horse rider. Strong, directed emotions are a very positive thing. They are the power which moves you towards your goals, sees you through the rough times, and pushes you to success. Undirected, these same emotions lead you down a path of self-destruction. Lack of emotion results in drifting through life. Nobody notices if you are there or not. You do not succeed in business, nor do you fail. Life is mundane and routine. Most people who lack emotions are pale horse riders, at the mercy of physical circumstances and the environment. The red horse rider has strong emotions which run away with him. Feelings are all that matter. Decisions are made to satisfy his feeling needs. The red horse rider is controlled by his feelings. In this world, there are many red horse riders. Next is the black horse. Black is the color of the intellect, factual knowledge, reason, and logic. The black horse represents the intellectual or mental nature of man. Here's a quote. "And I beheld, and lo, a black horse. And he that sat on him had a pair of balances in his hand. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts say, A measure of wheat for a penny, and 3 measures of barley for a penny. And see thou hurt not the oil and the wine." Revelation 6:5-6. The pair of scales held by the black horse rider represents lack or famine. There is not enough to go around. It must be measured and rationed. The black horse rider is one who lets the intellect dominate his life to the exclusion of the emotional, physical, and spiritual natures. These must starve so the intellect can prevail. In comparison to the pale and the red horse, very few people ride the black horse, yet some do. Atheists, intellectuals, and those who demand a reason for everything frequently ride the black horse. These demand that everything about mankind and nature be explained precisely in words and fit into the patterns and limits they set. They deny the spiritual without even knowing they do so. Having a good intellect has nothing to do with riding the black horse. The intellect is a tool, and used as such is most valuable. It is the tool you are using now to understand these words. It is the tool you use to secure the things you need and want. Without brilliant intellects, we would not have roads, planes, bridges, buildings, books, phones, high-quality produce, and all the other conveniences of the modern world. The intellect is good, desirable, needed, and positive. Only when we make a god out of the intellect does it become destructive. The intellect can deal only in the physical realm. It knows not wisdom, nor can it comprehend the infinite. When the intellect is held above all else, then we ride the black horse. The black horse rider is dominated by the intellect. Now, the last horse is the white horse, representing the spiritual nature of man. In this horse lies the solutions to all problems. Here's a quote. "And I saw, and behold, a white horse. And he that sat on him had a bow, and a crown was given unto him. And he went forth conquering and to conquer." Revelation 6:2. White, the color of purity and light, is the color of this horse, which goes forth to conquer. The rider of the white horse must realize and demonstrate the infinite power, the I Am power, the universal mind, God. This must be first in his life, for the white horse is the spiritual. To put this infinite power first means to become totally in tune with the superconscious, to put aside limits, to know and trust your inner voice. For those who do this, the reward is a crown, which is victory, and a bow, accomplishment. The white horse rider puts the spiritual first. Very few indeed ride this horse. Now, which horse are you riding? Pale, red, black, or white? The answer is evident by the results in your life. Do you suffer from health problems, from poverty, a feeling of discomfort or loss? If so, you are riding the pale horse. Does your life seem out of control with lots of ups and downs, torn feelings, and depressions? If so, then you are riding the red horse. Is your life a disillusionment, a disappointment, where there seems to be no meaning? If this seems to fit, then you ride the black horse. If your life is a life of liberty, full of health, wealth, and peace of mind? If this is yes, then you ride the white horse. But my life doesn't exactly fit any of those descriptions, you argue. And you probably are right. You may find that throughout your life, you switch horses. The question is, which horse are you riding now? You may find that you ride all of the horses somewhat. The question is, which one do you ride predominantly? Identify that horse, and you can locate the key to unlocking your potential. The story of the four horsemen of the apocalypse shows the way to liberty. If you want health, happiness, prosperity, and above all, liberty, you must ride the white horse. There is no other way. How? How do you get off a pale or a red or a black horse and onto a white one? Must you deny all material pleasures and pursuits? Must you totally control the emotions and subjugate the intellect? Certainly not. Such action would only enslave you further. The key to riding the white horse is in the description of the white horse rider. The white horse rider puts the spiritual first. The spiritual means the superconscious, the inner voice, the universal power of good. This is first, that is, in the lead. The white horse rider does not deny the physical, the emotional, and the intellectual. Rather, he directs them according to his own inner voice toward the benefit of all mankind. He seeks a higher goal, one beyond the three-dimensional plane of the physical world we know. Thus, physical pleasures are sought not for their own sake, but as a tool to a greater goal. Wealth becomes a means to an end. The emotions, and they usually are very strong ones, add vitality, energy, and commitment. From the intellectual nature comes the practical knowledge to put it all together. Plans, follow-through, alternatives, evaluations, and decisions. Thus, the energies and goals of each of the three natures, physical, emotional, and intellectual, are transmuted to a higher nature, the spiritual. In so doing, the white horse comes forward. You become a white horse rider. When the pale, red, and black horses pull together, equal in balance and strength, towards a worthy goal, then and only then will the white horse emerge. Let us look for a moment at some of the white horse riders throughout history. The following, I feel, were white horse riders during at least part of their lives. Buddha, Jesus, Joan of Arc, Martin Luther King, Lincoln, Moses. As I look over these names, I see people who were very much alike. Did they not all have dedication to a cause, one which was for the betterment of mankind? Did they not all totally commit their physical, emotional, and intellectual natures toward the achievement of that goal? I think they did, for such is the nature of the white horse rider. I use the above people only for illustration. Do not think that becoming a white horse rider will require you to be a martyr or a national leader. This may happen, all things are possible, but it probably will not. There are many white horse riders whose names are unknown, whose accomplishments go unrecorded. No lesser are these, for all earthly glory eventually fades. 1,000 years from now, many of those listed above will be but names on a page of ancient history. Civilization as a whole, right now, is riding the black horse. With the Renaissance came the discovery of intellect, followed by an emphasis on the scientific and factual. Our educational systems and various social and political institutions reflect this dominance by the intellect. It's not always been this way. The Middle Ages, the time of the Crusades, was a time when mankind as a whole rode the red horse, while the Roman Empire fell because it rode the pale horse. I think our civilization as a whole now has the opportunity to ride the white horse. The emphasis I see on humanism and awareness shows me the time is ripe. It is my goal to see that this happens. Peace of mind, liberty in our time. There is a way I'd like to illustrate the four natures of man, and that is through the peace of mind square. The peace of mind square has four sides: physical, perfect self-expression, which is emotional, wealth and knowledge, which is mental, and spiritual. These represent the four natures of man: physical, emotional, intellectual, and spiritual, respectively. The four sides are joined to form a square, each side being of equal length and importance. When this happens, peace of mind results. Should one side be too short or too long, then no square can be formed, and less peace of mind will be achieved. The steps to the peace of mind square are blocked by envy, hate, jealousy, limits, hurt feelings, fears, and etc. Are these not the result of riding the pale red or black horse? And is not peace of mind the result of riding the white horse? No matter how it is said, there is only one way to health, happiness, joy, peace of mind, and liberty. The choice to follow the path or not is yours. In the peace of mind square, as well as in the four horsemen of the apocalypse, maintaining a balance equal importance between the physical, the emotional, and the intellectual is essential. If there is no balance, then one must predominate. Only with balance, all three pulling together in one direction, mutually supporting each other, can the spiritual emerge and gain control. For a life to be truly successful, this balance must happen because the spiritual, the superconscious, is the source of all power. All life and consciousness begin in the spiritual, and in reality never leave. The senses deceive us. We see a tree or an apple and forget the life force needed for its creation. To bring your life into balance means to get things back into perspective, a perspective based on spiritual awareness. This is to acknowledge the rightful place of the physical, the emotional, and the intellectual in your existence. By so doing, you gain power, peace of mind, and liberty. Balance is the key to power. Now, throughout this book, I've spoken mainly in the abstract and the symbolic. Now let us jump into the realm of reality. Consider the modern world in which we must live. What is it going to be like for you as you work to create liberty in your life? You're going to find that some people resent you. It is important you know ahead of time that you will meet resentment and resistance on your road to liberty. As you put your life in balance, you will begin to achieve goals. Your life will have purpose and vitality. Those close to you, both at home and at work, will notice the difference. Some will support you as you change. These are your true friends. Others, unfortunately, will resent the change because they don't know how to relate to you. You have changed the rules. Still, others will respect the results in your life, but not like you anymore. To like you, you must measure up equally with them. This they control by the way they perceive you. As you gain liberty, they no longer see you as an equal. You appear to be better, to have more, to do more, to be more. They will respect you. They will not like you. Rest assured, though, that for every friend that fades away, a new, stronger one will appear. For just as some people can no longer relate to the changed you, others will be drawn by the changes in you. There is balance in all things. If something is taken away, an equal amount will be returned to you. It is only the form in which it returns that is unknown. Be prepared, too, for the loudest and strongest criticism to come from those nearest and dearest. They will be the first to notice the change and not know how to cope with it. Here I speak of your parents, your wife, or your husband, and your children, especially your children. Their criticism is not of words, but of hurt looks, anger, and tears. Think how you would react if suddenly your parents made a major change in lifestyle. When a child's world, so newly built, is suddenly changed, he sees it as shattered. It may be necessary to start from scratch to build a new relationship. Painfully, I know from personal experience that this is so. There was a point in my life, perhaps you will recall it from my personal story, where I knew I had to change, to go on, at the direction of my inner voice. Yet I also knew that my beautiful children did not understand. My heart was torn. For their sakes and mine, I did not go on to be all that I could be. My love for them would not permit me to do otherwise. At this point, you might be asking yourself, can I achieve liberty and stay married? I say the answer is yes, if you want to, and that applies for both men and women. The traditional marriage relationship is that of providing, dominant husband and a supporting dependent wife. As long as both parties play their appropriate roles, everything is beautiful. The marriage is smooth. Now let us suppose one or the other decides they want liberty. First, let's take the wife. She decides she wants liberty, to have what she wants to have when she wants to have it, to do what she wants to do when she wants to do it, and to be what she wants to be when she wants to be it. Instantly, there are problems. A traditional husband cannot give up the traditional habits cold turkey, and neither can the wife, even when she says she wants to. In her trek toward liberty, a wife may think she has to change every relationship, disregard the old commitments, and forge ahead. Not so. First, she must change herself, change her thinking. So many people, and not just wives, try to first change the external. All they end up doing is replacing their old environment with a new model of the same thing. So first, change the internal. She must see herself as capable, confident, liberated, and fulfilling her commitments. Doing what you want to do means you can choose freely what you want to do. And that includes choosing, if you want, housework. Or it can mean choosing to take the responsibility to arrange for someone else to do it. Being capable and confident means just that. It does not mean being superwoman or acting like a man is supposed to act. There is no conflict between being responsible, capable, and confident, and being feminine. And finally, taking on responsibilities does not mean taking over the husband's responsibilities. Liberty for a wife must also mean liberty for her husband in the marriage. Next, the husband. Suppose he decides he wants liberty. Much of what I have said to the wife also applies here. First, the change must be internal. Traditionally, the husband is the provider and the decision maker. There is no conflict here with liberty. If, however, he feels overburdened with responsibility due to a totally dependent wife, then his task is to liberate her. He can do this by totally supporting her goals and efforts. I have never met a person who does not desire liberty. Give her a chance, and she too will work to liberate that marriage. More difficult is the non-traditional but more common situation where the wife essentially runs the household. A husband seeking liberty in such a marriage must gain confidence and assertiveness to get the respect of his wife and family. He must also take on responsibilities he has avoided under the guise of, she won't let me. All it takes is a decision. Surprising as it may seem, the wives of such marriages welcome this. I have talked with hundreds of such women. Repeatedly, their comment is, I took over because he wouldn't. I have a beautiful wife. She is the most capable, confident, and powerful woman I've ever known. And she is totally feminine. She does not try to be like me in any way. She is totally herself. I couldn't ask for a better supporter, and still she has liberty, as do I. A marriage in which each partner experiences liberty is beautiful. I wish you each such a relationship. Many see liberty as a shining pot of gold at the end of a rainbow. They think that with liberty, all troubles will vanish and the days will flow without care. This simply is not so. Liberty is a state of mind, which will be reflected in the material world in terms of health, wealth, and power. There is nothing said about freedom from troubles. In fact, you'll have more and bigger ones than you do now. For the stature of a man is gauged by the size of the problem he can handle. As you achieve liberty, you will also achieve the ability to deal with the problems you face. The balance of the universe is maintained. This is beautifully stated by Khalil Gibran in The Prophet. You shall be free. Indeed, when your days are not without a care, nor your nights without a want and a grief, but rather when these things girdle your life, and yet you rise above them naked and unbound. And so it will be with you. There will come a time when you realize that troubles are but passing shadows. Then you will know that you have indeed achieved liberty. My dream is to help the people of the world achieve peace of mind, liberty, in my lifetime. Or if I should not see it in my lifetime, than that my children might. For I know that liberty is the ultimate goal of this life experience. It is man's birthright, waiting for him to claim it. Go forward now and claim yours. Love, peace, and liberty.